A fifth. She roared again, pure threat, animal, and free of complication. A hesitation before the sixth, as if she had given even Mistress Blade pause. A seventh. Nona's hands tore at the stone, jolting the straps about her wrists and the iron ring above. Eight. The bright lines wove tight into a single writhing cord of light burning crimson and gold across her vision. Nine. Ten. Nona could no longer tell if she were shouting. Each new line, the wire willow scored into her, flowed into the blazing path before her, becoming a single rope twisted from the hole. It hung before her mind's eye, wrapping about itself, twisting, loops of bright thread seen here and there as when wool is woven into yarn. 11. 12. Nona's back felt molten. She could feel the blood trickle across her buttocks, down her thighs, feel each drop as if it were burning metal, liquid from the inhuman heat of furnace and forge. But what burned more were the eyes of her enemies upon her, Zol and Shirzal. Nothing else mattered, not novice or nun, not the High Priest or Mistress Blade striking the blows, just the eyes of her enemies, heavy upon her with the weight of their satisfaction. More blows, the count lost between them, one so sharp it threw her head back and her eyes open. The wall before her hands lay scored, dark lines against the pale stone, deep and shadow-filled slots in the limestone where the claws of her rage had cut in. Her secret released, Nona's body jolted against the wall, and her fury reached a new incandescence, chasing away all trace of pain. The single path spun from the threads of a dozen, and more blows suddenly snapped into a new configuration, a pattern that filled her sight, a single line chasing through hard angles, a corner, another corner, a surface filled with rectangles, a space filled with blocks, sketched in place with one bright line, a wall. Another blow hit home, and, howling, Nona reached for the path. She set foot upon it and was filled. In just one moment the path poured through her. An awful, wondrous potential ran in her veins, filled every void, pressed against the insides of her eyes, sang in every bone, bursting, consuming, bleeding from her pores. The fear of destruction didn't scare Nona from the path. She would have chased so marvelous a doom to the world's end. Rather, it was the path that slipped from beneath her, live and coiling, twisting away even as she tried from her next step. In some complex space with a dozen ups and 100 swinging downs, Nona lost her balance and stumbled back into the world. The wire willow hit her. She heard it crack. The crack ran through her. Threw her hands flat against the wall, deep amid the pattern of corners, rectangles and blocks. For one heartbeat, a new silence held the hall, and in that silence the walls trembled. In the next heartbeat, the stone before her began to fracture, with a noise like the world ending, and everything fell. Up! A strong hand closed around Nona's wrist, drawing her up and to the side. Her other arm, still bound to the first, rose too. Pieces of broken limestone fell from her as she came upright. Her feet found the ground and she stumbled against Sister Tallow, hurting her instep on jagged rubble. The surface of the wall had shattered outward to a depth of 4 or 5 inches in an area some yards across. The iron ring dangled by the straps still binding Nona's wrists. Its pin lodged in a lump of broken stone no bigger than her hand. Sisters Tallow and Rose wrapped Nona in a sheet. The novices looked on, pale with the dust now sifting down across the hall. "I'll carry her." Sister Rose reached for Nona as she had when she lay arrow-struck that second week. "No." Nona spat blood onto the sand. Her back hurt as if 1,000 scalding hooks were lodged in it. each on strings being pulled in different directions.
"I'll walk."
She left the hall, head down and eyes on the sand, taking the steps that old women take, with Sister Rose following close behind. She stopped, only once, just as she passed Zol in the line of novices. With head still down, she turned her face to watch the girl from the one eye not yet swollen closed. She didn't speak, only showed her teeth in a crimson grin, then moved on. Zol had a face on which it seemed nothing could be read, but, however deep the girl's faith in herself ran, when Nona smiled, she had seen in those dark eyes a moment of doubt. Nona made it through the main doors and turned from sight. The ice wind caught her a second later, and Sister Rose proved quicker than she looked, snatching her up before she hit the ground.
Chapter 27 Whatever herbs Sister Rose ground up, whatever unsavory pieces of unsavory animals she extracted and refined, none seemed to numb the pain of Nona's lacerations quite so well as distraction. It seemed a shame, then, that the sanatorium was perhaps the most uniformly dull part of the convent, offering nothing more by way of entertainment than a window onto its small garden. Nona would have given a lot for some company. The other four beds remained empty, and she soon reached the point where pushing someone down the stairs in order to fill one of them seemed quite a reasonable solution. The first visitor Nona received turned out to be Sister Wheel, and even this proved a welcome diversion from the business of lying on her side, staring out the window until that side became too numb, and Sister Rose rolled her to stare at the wall.
"Don't stay long, Wheel," Sister Rose said to Sister Wheel's back, as the smaller woman elbowed past her bulk. "And don't upset her."
Sister Wheel reached the side of Nona's bed, then turned to stare at Sister Rose until she coloured, looked away, and finally backed through the doorway, pulling the door shut behind her.
"Couldn't keep me out!" Sister Wheel reached up to tap her headdress. "Only the abbess herself could, and even she can't overrule both of us. That's why it's me and Rose. Choose us because we never agree on anything."
She pulled a chair close to the bed, the scraping of its feet loud and unpleasant.
"I suppose you feel pretty full of yourself, don't you?"
She sat hands clasped in her lap.
"Because you've got a touch of Quantel in you. You think you're a two-blood."
If Sister Wheel had a better example of a two-blood than someone with Quantel and Hunska flowing in their veins, then Nona would have been interested to hear it. You needed more than a touch of Quantel to reach the path. But she swallowed any reply and kept her lips pressed in a tight line, watching the wide and watery hostility of the nun's eyes.
"You're thinking it might be you who's the Argatha. Well, it's not. Nothing good ever came out of the grey. Only broken things, peasants, and lies. The Argatha is sent to save us. Will she be a golden princess of the Emperor's own bloodline? Or an urchin taken from under the shadow of the noose? Which do you think? Really?"
Flecks of spittle marked the nun's chin.
"The abbess said the prophecy was just made up," Nona said.
Sister Wheel waved the idea away.
"That's what prophecy is. It's something that's made up and that we have faith is true."
Nona returned her lips to their line. She wasn't going to argue faith with Mistress Spirit, even if Mistress Spirit was about as sane as a naked stroll in the ice wind.
"In any event," Sister Wheel narrowed her eyes, "it's not you. It's possible that you're the shield. I'll entertain that unlikely thought now, but don't go getting ideas above your station."
She stood to go, took three paces towards the door, stopped, and fitted her bony fists in the material of her habit just above her hips. For a moment she paused, caught on the point of indecision, then looked back over her shoulder.
"By rights, you do two more strokes of the cane. That may not be necessary. Just take my words to heart. The ancestor has a plan for you, girl."
As Sister Wheel stalked out, Sister Rose bustled in, her hands full of linen strips.
"I'll change your dressings now, dear."
Nona sighed and eased herself onto her front, as Sister Rose fussed over her tutting.
"This wasn't right. Not right at all."
The nun peeled off the soiled wrappings with deft fingers.
"It's a cruel enough punishment even when you're guilty."
Nona didn't want to hear Ara being criticized. "Why does she hate me?"
"Who?"
Sister Rose's innocence didn't so much as approach the foothills of convincing. Nona said nothing more, and a moment later the nun broke the silence.
"She doesn't hate you, Nona. Well, she's... that's just weal."
She peeled back another linen strip, sticky with blood, and Nona winced.
"She came from the Grey, you know."
"Who?
Sister Weal?" "From a tiny village called... I forget. But it sounded like a hard place to survive. We were novices together, you know."
"Sister Weal? From the Grey?" Nona found that hard to imagine.
"You were in the same classes?"
That seemed scarcely easier to believe.
"But she's old."
Sister Rose laughed at that.
"Weal's got more than a touch of Hunska. The years haven't been kind, and wrinkles don't show on us well-filled individuals."
"She doesn't have the accent." Nona remained unconvinced.
"You've lost half of yours in 2 years. Stay here a few more and nobody will know Nona Grey unless you let her out."
Sister Rose began to wash the cuts. The fresh pain saved Nona from thinking of a reply to that. She gritted her teeth and buried her face in the pillow with a snarl. Sister Pan came to visit Nona that evening, using her rank to overcome the barrier still keeping the novices at bay. She sat down with one hand in her lap, cradled over the stump of the other.
"Well,"
she said. Nona offered the nun a small smile. Since Nona's first day in Path, this was perhaps the only time Pan had looked at her with any particular interest. Nona liked Sister Pan. The old woman had a sharp wit, but was never unkind. She entertained and guided, rather than directing or dictating. Even so, she seemed almost blind to those without at least a touch of Quantle, as if the novices were interchangeable, save for Hesse and Ara, and she only became truly animated with those two.
"You seem to have reached the path via a route I didn't teach you,"
Sister Pan said.
"Why didn't you teach it?"
Nona asked. Perhaps even with all her years, Pan hadn't known the way. The nun smiled, ancient in her wrinkles, displaying the worn columns of her remaining teeth.
"Abbess Glass might object if I chained each novice to a wall and beat them bloody on the off chance they might run from the whip and reach the path."
She rubbed her chin.
"Also, even on Quantles it almost never works, and when it does it's of limited use. Serenity allows a person to approach the path in a slow and measured way. To stay on the path is incredibly difficult. It requires years of training and rare innate skill. Taking more than a few steps on the path is hard, even when a person edges carefully onto it. When rage or pain take you there. Consider the blade path game that Sister Tallow keeps in her hall. Serenity is a novice edging out from the platform. Feet placed with care, arms spread for balance, considering what lies ahead. Rage is a novice bursting from the door at full pelt and racing out over the drop. She may touch the blade path on her way down, but she's not truly walking it."
"That was just a touch?"
Even as she spoke, Nona knew it to be true. She had fallen from the path as soon as she set foot upon it. Not that feet were involved, but the image helped her to make sense of the experience.
"We will examine this matter in class, Nona. There may be exciting times ahead. For now, though, practice your serenity. It will help with the pain. That should be motivation enough by itself, even without the path waiting for you."
Sister Pan stood with an audible creak.
"Seek the path, but do not touch it."
She glanced around.
"Sister Rose would not forgive you for damaging the sanatorium. Sister Tallow is far from pleased with the damage wrought in Blade Hall. Also, you would likely die. You were very lucky to have been able to shape and push the path's energies into the wall.
A speculative look.
We will talk about how you managed that later.
Sister Pan turned to go, shuffling towards the door with the speed of an old lady 20 years her junior.
Thank you, sister.
Nona spoke the words quietly to Sister Pan's back, but the nun, overturning Clara's insistence that she was deaf, spun around as she said them.
Thank you, novice. When you get to my age, you need things like this to keep you alive. Take it from me. I have been too young to know, and I have been too old to care. It's in the oh-so-narrow slice between that memories are made, so enjoy it.
And with that, she was gone, the door swinging shut behind her.
Exciting times! Exciting times!
Nona lay staring at the door. The animation in Sister Pan's face when she spoke of the path returned her to that moment of contact, the awful energy that had filled her like a fire under her skin. The memory pushed aside the pain from her wounds, leaving it a mere tickle at the edge of things. There had been an instant of release as she had driven her talons into the wall and emptied the path's power into the stone. She wanted that feeling again. She hadn't felt anything like it before. Shelter and a fire's warmth after the ice wind didn't come close. Not even food offered to a stomach left empty for too many days. She wanted it again. Clara, Ruli, and Eula came the next day, bustling in behind Sister Rose, Ruli leaning out to the side to grin at Nona past the nun's rotundity. They descended on her bed, making her wince as the mattress shifted under their weight.
"I'm in grey class,"
Eula crossed her legs at the far end of the bed.
"The poisoner finally gave me my shade stamp."
"That's great." Nona would have missed Eula, especially her help in academia. They grinned at each other. More than for her ability to guide Nona's hand to make perfect letters on the slate in place of her wobbly attempts, Nona liked Eula for the way her bookishness fell away on the sands of Blade Hall. If you didn't keep your wits about you, the scribe's daughter would set you on your backside, hard, and all without a drop of Hunska in her veins.
"How are you?"
Ruli leaned in, worried, reaching a tentative hand for Nona's arm.
"You look awful."
"She's fine," Clara said. "She took down the damn wall. Showed that bitch Zoe."
Nona eased herself into a sitting position, manufactured a smile, and let the conversation flow about her. It just took a yes here, a why there, to keep it running on, and she found comfort in the familiar rhythm of their gossip. Ara apparently would be in to see her later. She wanted to come on her own, feeling very guilty about the whole whipping girl thing.
"And so she should," Clara cut across Ruli. "They all do it. The sis spit on us all the time. Even if they don't mean to, they just think of us as things to be used."
Zol had remained when Shazal left, and was taken into grey class, where she kept a watchful silence, not rising to taunts or threats. Clara was glad to report that the tribe girl had fallen off the blade path within 5 yards of starting, and showed no particular aptitude for academia. Of particular note and worthy of a mimed impression was her introduction to the poisoner, one that saw her fleeing the cave just minutes into the class, a hand clutching both main orifices. Sister Tallow, according to Ruli, had spent the whole of their last lesson aiming a brooding stare at the cratered wall and letting the older novices beat the younger ones black and blue.
"She did promise to teach us to counter that talker move Zol used on you, though," Clara said.
She smiled at that, then veered into a new topic.
"And my father's still in the debtor's jail, but they let Mother and my sisters visit him."
No novice ignored the convent's disapproval of discussing family quite so impressively as Clara. She scowled.
"He should have been released by now. The only debts left to clear are ones that everyone knows are fake."
"Jewish father's working at the palace now,"
Ruli chipped in with a bright smile. Eula, rule follower to her core, just made a quick and agitated shake of her head, then looked down. The chatter bubbled along, taking Nona's mind from her discomfort, until Bray spoke, the bell's deep voice resonating across the convent, and the three visitors jumped up to go.
"Spirit next! You're better off here!"
Clara called over her shoulder.
"Hurry up and get better!"
Ruli followed her.
"I'll pray for your recovery."
Jula led her hand on Nona's, then ran to catch the others. Hours later, and the lights slanted crimson into the room, the sun's edge burning above the rooftop. Nona thought it would drop away and the day would end before Ara came to see her, but the door opened, and there she was.
"I'm sorry." "What in the world for? And that was my line."
Ara hurried across to sit in the chair beside Nona's bed.
"I didn't beat her,"
Nona said.
"You can't beat everyone. And besides, you are already hurt."
Ara studied Nona with concern, her gaze flitting here and there, looking for evidence of injuries.
"How are you now?"
Nona shrugged and wished she hadn't.
"Sister Rose will let me go soon." "At least you got through the blood war at the same time as you got beaten. That's not fun, either."
"Blood war?" Nona frowned. She felt pretty sure that whatever it was a blessing compared to 20 strokes of a wire willow cane.
"When I started to be able to get close to the path, when my quantal blood started to assert itself, I felt awful. I thought I was dying. Well, not dying, but I felt sick for a week. Sister Pam says it's called the blood war. But you got pushed through the transition so quickly, you missed it."
Nona shut her mouth. It might be a small blessing, but she supposed it was a blessing.
"Zol is very fast."
Ara looked at her hands resting in her lap, fingers knotted.
"I should have let Sister Tallow end the fight."
"Why didn't you?"
"She was taking so long, and Zol was hurting you."
Nona pursed her lips and watched Ara's downturned eyes. Her friend's hair hung about her face, as long and golden as it had been on the day she arrived.
"You were in a serenity trance, Ara. You could have watched her kill me without losing control of yourself. You were getting ready even before the fight started."
"I saw you." Doubt struck, cold and hard.
"You didn't think I had a chance, did you?"
Ara looked up sharply.
"It wasn't that at all. It was Shirzal. I wanted her to be afraid of me."
"Afraid?" The Emperor's sister hadn't looked like a woman who knew how to be afraid.
"She would have stolen me from my family. She did steal me from my family, only to the convent rather than into her clutches. And now she's trying to reach in here to get at me. So I wanted to show her that the very reason she wants me is the reason she should fear me. I wanted her to know that if she tried to hold me in her palace, I'd bring the walls down around her ears. Only now she's seen that you're what she wants too. And you haven't got family connections for her to worry about like I have. Is that how you feel? Stolen? You want to be back with your family and your servants? Leave us all behind?"
The word "us" stumbled out at the last moment in place of me.
"I'd like to feel safe to visit them, to see my mother and father. I miss my little sister too, even Sonella, a little bit. Perhaps she's not so much of a cow now."
Nona smirked. Ara had 100 stories about her older sister, none of them flattering. Some that made you laugh hard enough to wet yourself.
"Well, maybe we both scared her off, or perhaps we both put ourselves on her wanted list. Either way, we're in it together, which is as it should be. The chosen one, and her shield."
"You know that stuff's nonsense, don't you?" Ara looked serious for a moment.
"Shirzal doesn't want us because the prophecy's real. She wants us because people believe the prophecy."
Nona nodded. "Even if I believed in prophecies, then Sister Wheel wanting this one to be true so badly would be enough to stop me believing it."
Chapter 28
"Who's that?" Nona asked. A short woman was approaching Path Tower, a black coat flapping about her legs, her dark hair drawn up behind her head in a severe bun, her skin sharing the same reddish hint as Zoe's. She carried a sword at each hip.
"Yisht,"
Ara said. They had been the first to arrive, coming directly from the sanatorium. Sister Rose had told Nona the night before that she could return to the dormitory the next day and resume all her lessons excepting Blade, which, given that Blade was the only class Nona really cared about, had been a disappointment.
"Yisht?"
Nona frowned. "That's a real name?"
"As real as Zol,"
Darla said, glowering at the approaching woman. Tula and Darla had joined them at the eastern door, waiting for Sister Pan to unlock it. As Darla said her name, Nona spotted Zol walking in Yisht's shadow.
"She's Zol's bodyguard, if you can believe that,"
Ara said.
"Shazal wanted to station 16 of her guards to watch over her precious heir. The Abbess argued her down to 1. She knew they'd be doing more than just watching over Zol."
Jula nodded.
"I think the High Priest has Abbess Glass under orders not to interfere with her, though. Alata came running around a corner and Yisht slammed her into a wall. Nearly broke her arm. Said it looked as if she were rushing at Zol. As if Zol can't defend herself."
"What did the Abbess do?"
"That's just it. The Abbess didn't do anything. Sister Rose must have told her because she called Yisht a whole bunch of names that I would have sworn she didn't know. And Sister Rose never gets angry."
"Anyway," Ara took the lead back, "Sister Pan won't let her in the tower. She has to stand guard out here." She shot a dirty look at Zol and her protector as they closed the last few yards.
"I hope the ice wind picks up again."
"Yisht is from the ice, like me," Zol said, coming to stand beside Jula. "On the ice, the wind roars. Here you hear a whisper and think you know cold." She shook her head, amused. Ara carried on as if the girl hadn't spoken.
"Shazal wanted Saphira to lead the 16. Saphira, an expelled novice who's betrayed the convent and the church, teaching blade lore outside these walls for money."
Nona remembered Ara mentioning Zol's teacher on the day the Emperor's sister visited.
"She stabbed someone here. Another novice?"
"She stabbed Sister Kettle. She was lucky they didn't drown her. They should have."
"Kettle?"
Nona's mind raced. She had spent a year having Sister Kettle teach her to read and write, the young nun always full of chatter and gossip. But being stabbed had never come up. Now Nona thought about Kettle's slight limp, and how no one at the convent had come close to her blade path time, and yet she had never walked it in the 2 years since Nona arrived.
"You said Saphira stabbed a novice."
"She and Saphira were novices together,"
Ara leaned in to whisper, her hair falling forward over Nona's shoulder, breath tickling her ear.
"They bedded together in holy class. But then Sister Apple joined the convent and, well, you know, Saphira was jealous. There were arguments, and Kettle got stabbed while walking away from the last one."
The door rattled, Sister Pan unlocking it from within. Ara jerked back as if caught doing something she shouldn't, and Darla pushed on through. While Sister Pan moved to unlock the next door, Nona, Ara, and Jula hurried in behind Darla and up the staircase, sparing no glances for the portraits. Zol was the last one up the stairs, behind the rest of Grey Class, following Sister Pan up the steps, asking a question in a low voice.
"She's always sucking up to Mistress Path," Clara said, sitting at Nona's left. "Probably making notes on everything for when she goes back to Shazal."
"And when will that be?"
Nona kept to a whisper, convinced Sister Pan's alleged deafness was just the old woman's ruse so she could keep up to date with novice gossip. Clara shrugged.
"She says she's here to be a nun."
The first two-thirds of the lesson proceeded as usual with meditation and instruction in the vexed business of attaining clarity, serenity, and patience. Clara used to joke that they should all work on patience first, because they were surely going to need it to survive the class. But the joke had been old before she was born, and now she usually spent the lessons trying to sleep with her eyes open, or badgering Sister Pan to let the class practice blade path up at the hall while she concentrated on her star pupils. Nona had never had much greater success with patience than she did with serenity. In fact, they seemed almost the same thing to her, though Sister Pan insisted otherwise.
Patience belongs to the predator. It waits before the strike. Patience is invaluable to sisters of discretion. Those that can weave shadows use patience to settle themselves into the darkness with sufficient depth that they can gather it to them.
You're saying that if I get this, I can do what Sister Kettle did in Blade Hall. The image of Kettle rising from nowhere returned to Nona. She saw it again and again. Kettle, trailing shadow, leaping up and carrying her to the sand. I can be invisible like a Noiguin?
Noiguin aren't invisible, child.
Sister Pan's mouth twisted with displeasure.
Their shadow workers are so good because they focus on nothing else. So narrow an education is of limited use. In any event, the answer to your question is no. Only those with at least a touch of Marjal have the potential for dark work, and even some of them never manage it. But whether they have the talent or not, they will need to attain the patient's trance to make best contact.
But what can the Quantals do with their path-walking apart from break stuff? Sister Pan raised her voice, drawing the attention of those in the class not already listening in.
The Marjals are conjurers. They touch the world's power in many separate places far from the path. Which parts of the secret world they touch, and how deeply, depends on their individual nature and how thick the Marjal runs in their veins. The path is different. It divides the living from the unliving. Some Marjals touch only the living side of the world, others the unliving. A few touch both. Most Marjals work with magics that lie far from the path. The greatest Marjals touch areas that lie close, but none touch or walk the path itself. Their magics are many, and usually minor, though often very helpful. But the path is about power. It is the source of power and the nature of it. Most Quantals will only ever gather this power and release it in short, violent bursts. The energy of the path is dangerous to hold on to. For the rare Quantal, however, with sufficient skill, the right training, and years of practice, the energy gathered from the path may be held and shaped and set to purpose without end. The path is a line, but it is not straight. It touches and separates all things. The path gives meaning to identity, to one thing being different and separate from the next. Its power can unravel the world and create it anew.
Sister Pan looked around the class.
Now, if Clara will oblige me by not breaking any of the furniture in her haste to leave, those novices who want to may practice blade path until the bell.
She set her stump to Nona's shoulder as the chairs clattered, and girls started for the stairs in a flutter and flap of habits.
You, Nona, will be staying.
As much as Nona would have liked to chase after the others, the stiffness of her scars and the pain when she flexed them were sufficient to keep her seated even without the weight of Sister Pan's attention upon her. Less than a minute later, only Nona, Ara, Hessa and Darla still occupied their seats, along with Zol and Alata's pale, red-haired friend, Lini.
Ara and Hessa will accompany me. You too, Nona. Darla, Zol, and Lini, continue your patience work.
Sister Pan crossed to the great chest and closed the lid before starting off down the spiral staircase. Hessa followed, awkward on her crutch. She glanced back at Nona.
Stay close.
Nona tucked in behind Hessa, Ara at her back,
and the three of them tracked Sister Pan down the tight spirals of the staircase.
"Picture the path, Nona. Don't close your eyes, but see it. Don't touch it, but let it lead you."
Sister Pan's voice echoed as if a vast hall held them, rather than the narrowness of the steps.
"Follow me, not the stairs beneath your feet. Just follow me."
For a moment, Nona saw the bright line of the path across the dark wool of Hesse's habit. The path drew her. A burning crack, one line and many, straight as a spear, and yet also twisting, its convolutions and loops filling the space between Hesse's shoulders, reaching in and through as if she weren't even there.
"Here we are!"
Sister Pan's voice returned to its usual surprisingly youthful tone. Nona blinked. They were neither in the stairwell nor in the vast hall that she had sensed about her. The chamber curved as if it lived between the tower hall and the staircase, occupying a third of the full circle. It had no windows, only a series of small flames burning in alcoves for light. Six blackwood chairs stood in disorder at the middle of the room, and every wall, even the floor and ceiling, lay crowded with sigils written in silver, bedded into the stone.
"Sit!"
Sister Pan waved at the chairs. Nona sat staring up at the ceiling, heavy with gleaming silver. The sigils made writing, which had once looked fiendishly complex to her, seem foolishly simple. Each palm-sized symbol was a work of art, a single line folded into a complexity that burned into the backs of her eyes and began to fold her mind about it. They almost looked like fragments of the path frozen into an instant.
"Don't stare, Nona. Generally it's rude. Where sigils are concerned, it can be dangerous."
Sister Pan set her fingers to the nearest wall.
"These are the work of a Marjal Void Scribe, a master of the art now long dead. They ensure that any accidents you have while attempting to walk the path are confined to this room. I love this tower, just as Sister Tallow loves her hall, and I'd rather not have a reckless novice knock it down. Only the other day, before you were born, perhaps, Novice Sega touched the path unexpectedly early upstairs. I'd just shown her the first serenity exercise. Anyway, she screamed so loud it blew the windows out. All my lovely stained glass. We found pieces of it embedded in the dome of the ancestor. It was a while before I could hear anything after that."
Sister Pan turned to Ara.
"Novice Arabella, who has already heard me express my disappointment in her over the actions that saw Nona beaten, will begin."
She motioned for Hesse and Nona to join her at the far end of the room, close to the point where the wall's curvature would hide them from sight. Nona came to stand beside the nun. She had the peculiar smell that old people get, no matter how clean they might be. Not musty, or sour, or stale. Just old.
"Now that we know you are of the blood, Nona, you should understand that what we Quantle do here in this convent is easier and more effective because of the ship heart. Where it beats, the space between the pieces of the world is narrowed. It is easier to touch the path here, easier to walk it, easier to shape its energies."
"Really?" Nona had wanted to use a sharper word, one that might even be new to Clara's foul mouth, or the sailors who taught Ruli to swear. But she swallowed it. She stared up at Sister Pan.
"Really?
Because easy isn't a word I'd use for any of those things." Mistress Blade had beaten her half to death before she could even make glancing contact with the path. Sister Pan just smiled a small smile.
"Novice Arabella, approach the path in serenity. Take a single step and return, owning what you have been given."
Chapter 29 Nona left the hidden room after Hesse and Arabella. The rest of Grey Class was long gone. In the windowless chamber it was easy to miss Bray's call. Sister Pan had held her back, instructing that she set her hands to the sigil-crowded walls and allow any stray trace of path energy to leave her body. She hurried down the spiral stairs, still bubbling with exhilaration. Her contact with the path had been fleeting, but glorious. The path had filled her, and in doing so had woken her to the understanding that for all her life she had been hollow. It turned her flesh to gold, her mind to crystal. She wanted more, even as the power of it terrified her, and she felt her body shaking beyond her control. She wanted more. East door slammed behind her, closed by the wind. Nona paused at the tower base, staring at the greyness of the day in wonder, knowing that behind it all, through it all, ran the path. Someone took Nona's wrists from behind in an iron-fingered grip, jolting her from her musings. A hand to her elbow immobilized the limb, and a moment later Nona was bent forward, crying out in pain, her arm raised out straight behind her. Her attacker steered her back against the tower wall.
"You child will stay away from Zul."
"Yisht!"
Nona snarled, recognizing the accent of the ice tribes.
"Tell me that you understand and will obey."
Nona gritted her teeth against the agony in her shoulder. With her face pressed to the cold stones and her arm locked, there seemed no possible means of escape.
"You're going to break my arm!"
She snatched a breath.
"How many novices can you break before the abbess throws you out?"
Nona hadn't thought about challenging Zol again, but she was damned if she would be bullied.
"I could break more than your arm, child."
The pressure increased.
"I could break every joint of every finger."
Yisht spoke without relish, but something in her tone left no room for doubt. She would do these things.
"I could tear the eyes from your head."
Nona lurched away from the wall, shouting against the pain. If she had left by any other door, she might be seen from the convent buildings.
"A true fighter, I see."
Yisht steered her back against the stonework.
"Too brave for threats. But I have watched you. You care for the cripple. Cross me, in any way, and perhaps she will limp off a cliff one windy night."
She released Nona with a shove that sent her stumbling forwards, as if in demonstration of what might happen to Hessa. A dip in the rock caught Nona's foot, and she fell face first, feeling something tear in her lacerated back. By the time she righted herself, Yisht had gone.
"How did it go with the holy witches?"
Clara wanted to know when Nona entered the dormitory.
"I missed you at Blade, and at the bathhouse, and at dinner. Jula said something must have come up with Sister Pan, and she kept you for special lessons. But I said..."
"She said you were dead,"
Jula called over from her bed.
"She said Nona wouldn't miss a meal unless she was dead."
"I ate at the sanatorium, while Sister Rose changed my dressings and took out some stitches."
"So?"
Clara rolled over and rested her chin in her hands.
"What's the secret? Where does Sister Pan take you witches to play? It's something to do with the 10th step, isn't it? I always said it was."
"Yes. The 10th step. Tap it right and it opens a hidden passage." Nona climbed into her bed with care.
"Oh, you liar."
Clara swung her knees under her.
"Tell!"
"Sister Pan said she'd make an example of..."
"Don't be such a coward. You're Pan's favourite now. She won't hurt you."
"Of anyone I told,"
Nona finished.
"Oh!"
Clara slumped, then brightened.
"Tell Jula. She can tell me after."
Nona snorted and lay down on her side, taking care not to stretch her lacerations. Sister Pan had cautioned her to secrecy, but secrecy had been in her nature long before she reached the convent. Sister Apple had told her to strip on that first morning, and she hadn't wanted to. But she had done it because it was true. She had needed a bath. Giving up secrets, though, that left her more exposed than any degree of nakedness. She would rather walk nude through the convent than reveal her true nature. They had seen it at the village. Her own mother had seen it, and she had left there in a cage with curses and clods of earth thrown at her back. The words had been heavier, and had hurt the more.
Sleep came hard that night, surrounded by the soft sounds of dreaming. Images of Ara and Hesse working with the path's energies played across the darkness again and again.
Bright and crackling light filling hands to be thrown at the sigil-covered walls.
Or drawn back into the flesh, to imbue an awful shuddering strength. Visions of the path finally faded, and still Nona couldn't escape into dreaming. Yisht's iron grip held her from sleep, the bruises on Nona's arm anchoring her with a dull ache. She hadn't told the others. It would scare Hesse and gain nothing. All Nona had to do was not pursue any vengeance upon Zol, but beyond that, it was shame that kept her silent. Shame at how easily the woman had overmastered her, and shame at the fear she had felt. She lay staring at the darkness. Not until the blaze of the focus moon had come and gone would Nona's mind release her to oblivion. The best part of 3 weeks passed before Nona's back felt fully healed. She returned to blade classes with a passion, pitting her knife work against the older and more experienced novices, though keeping clear of Zol. She would, of course, have to face the girl if Sister Tallow instructed a match, but the nun kept both Ara and Nona away from her. Nona made sure to get to the blade path chamber at least 3 days in every seven, now that she never escaped a path lesson. No matter how slowly she took the course, though, and no matter how much resin she applied to her soles, she still managed to get no further than halfway, and usually less than that. The articulated pipes always seemed to end in a different combination of positions at the end of the previous attempt, making the course unpredictable, with sections swinging or rotating in unexpected ways and at unexpected times. Her only consolation was that Zol had yet to cross a third of the way without falling. One sour note was that Jula no longer practiced with them. Clara and Jula had some sudden and one-sided falling out after a 7-day on which both of them were allowed family visits in Verity. Clara wouldn't speak about it, but missed no opportunity to apply the sharp edge of her tongue to Jula, who simply looked miserable and confused.
"Why are you such a bitch to everyone, Clara?"
Ara asked after one fierce exchange that sent Jula running off in tears.
"Everyone?"
Nona blinked.
"Everyone?"
She had been watching Jula turn the corner past the scriptorium at the far end of the courtyard, and wondering how, after 2 years of training to accept the fiercest of blows and strike back, mere words got past their defences so easily.
"Everyone."
Ara nodded, eyes narrowed at Clara. Nona frowned. Perhaps it was true. If you weren't Clara's friend, you weren't anything to her. Clara shrugged and flipped her silver crown, catching the coin to examine the Emperor's head on the upward side.
"I don't want anyone to be sad when I die."
Ruli joined Grey Class on the day Sister Tallow introduced Nona, and at least a third of the newer novices, to the throwing star. Nona had held one only once before, and briefly, when it was thrown at her by Sister Wheel, and punched a hole in her palm. She still had a white seam of scar there. Throwing the things proved easier than catching them, but to hit a target with any accuracy proved harder than she had anticipated. Even so, Nona did rather well with only Zol and, unexpectedly, Ruli doing better than her out of the girls new to the weapon. And both Clara and Ara were strongly of the opinion that Zol had previous experience. Clara proved to be something of a liability, Sister Tallow expressing doubt at one point as to whether she could even reliably hit the floor with a throwing star. When Bray finally sounded, everyone's arms ached from the throwing action, Sister Tallow insisting that they learn with both left and right hand, and none of the new girls had a finger without at least some minor cuts.
"Novices!"
Sister Tallow called the class to her. This was no surprise. Blade was not a class you could run from at the bell.
"It is perhaps timely, given the difficulties presented to this class by novice Zol's use of combat styles unknown to you, that we are fast approaching the annual Cultus Forging. We will be travelling into Verity each day for 3 days, starting after next 7 day. I expect Grey Class to acquit itself well against the Cultus apprentices. Two among Leany, Darla, Alata, Shelar, and Croy will be entered into the sword ring. Three among those not selected for sword will be entering the unarmed contest.
The race to the bathhouse after Blade had become a particular point of pride since Zol's arrival, and even burning news like the sudden closeness of the Cultus forging had to wait until the sprint was over. Each novice gathered their day habit to change into after bathing, and collected by the main doors, ready to run. Darla, whose toes were still healing, and whose build made her a poor runner in any event, shoved open the doors, and the girls streamed out around her. Nona's size put her at a disadvantage, but she had caught up a few inches on her friends over 2 years of good eating at the convent. Zol, Ketty, and Clara opened up a lead on the first clear stretch past Hart Hall, with Ara just behind them. But Nona knew she had closed down on them in the tight turns past the laundry and around the long, low winery building. Where Zol and the others slowed to make the sharp turn amid the laundry steams, Nona ran directly at the opposite wall, leaping up at it to drive off at an angle into the narrow gap between the buildings. By the time the others exited the steam cloud, Nona had the lead.
"How the—"
Clara's gasp of outrage lost her unneeded breath and several more strides. Nona and Ketty spun past a bewildered Sister Rock and crashed through the bathhouse doors to victory, with Ara, Zol, and then Clara hard upon their heels.
"How will she choose?"
The question bounced around the changing room as habits were stripped with indecent haste.
"How?"
"I don't care as long as she chooses me."
Clara kicked off her remaining shoe.
"I don't see how she can't."
And with that she was running into the hot fog of the pool room.
"Sometimes it's contests. Sometimes she picks her favourites."
Alata stepped out of her underskirts.
"Last year it was favourites."
More opinions crossed back and forth, but Nona was pursuing Ara and they jumped into the pool's enfolding warmth together. Nona surfaced and let herself hang in the water, boneless, drifting in the white blindness, letting the chatter mix with the sound of splashing and flow around her, detached from any meaning.
"Well,"
Clara swam through the steaming water, dark hair fanned out across the surface behind her.
"The Cultus, it'll be like going home for you."
All around them, the shapes of novices in the mist, idle and floating in the middle of the pool, or in murmured conversation in small groups around the edges.
"What?"
Nona came to herself, shaking off the drowsiness. She backed before Clara's advance, swishing her hands before her, feet a yard above the bottom. She had no idea how much time had passed, though her fingers were wrinkly, so it must have been a while. The pool's walls reached around her as she arrived in one of the corners furthest from the changing room.
"The Cultus,"
Clara repeated.
"Familiar ground for you."
"I was only there a couple of months." She had known the forging was coming. Nobody passed through Grey Class without experiencing it. But the date was never given far in advance, depending on the fight schedule at the Cultus and any other commitments Partner Reeve might have.
"My father will bet on me,"
Clara said, swimming closer, trapping Nona in the corner, the currents of her approach reaching Nona's legs and belly.
"And win enough to buy his release."
"I thought the matches were private."
Nona remembered the baying of the crowd beneath the Cultus attic, something living, an animal greater than its many parts. She wondered what it would be like to fight in the middle of such a thing.
"They are private, silly."
Clara ducked beneath the surface and emerged closer still, squirting water at Nona from pursed lips.
"But that doesn't mean people don't bet on them, or that rich men don't pay to spy on the novices from hidden galleries."
"But the Blade Fist is secret. To be used if required, never to be displayed for mere show. That's what Sister Tallow said." Clara grinned and reached out to push a steam-damp lock from above Nona's eye.
They're more interested in us, silly.
She bobbed up out of the water and thrust her chest forward before twisting away with the splash. Ara took her place, her blonde hair dark with water.
Are you worried about the taxes? You know Raymil doesn't fight anymore, yes?
I know, Nona shrugged. Thurin Taxis had forgotten her. His son was alive. He had more to worry about than a peasant girl who fled to a nunnery. There had been nothing in 2 long years, not since the Noi Guin assassins and the High Priest's trial. But Abbess Glass still wouldn't let her leave the convent on 7 day, though half the novices went to Verity with a handful of nuns to chaperone them. In the darkness of the dormitory that night, Nona imagined herself once again amid the barrels, crates, and coiled ropes of the Kaltus attic, surrounded by scores of purchased children, uneasy in their dreams. She wondered about the Taxis brothers and their father, whom she had never seen, but who squandered a fortune to see her dead. Even if they still spared her a thought after 2 long years, a visit to the Kaltus would hardly be a sensible time for them to take revenge. Nona would be surrounded by witnesses, not to mention Sister Tallow and several other Red Sisters. Even so, she couldn't sleep. Something tugged at her. Fingernails drawn across a chalkboard, unheard but still somehow setting that nauseating quiver in the marrow of her bones. Was it just worry? She slipped from her blanket and walked on slow feet between the double rows of beds. The nightgown sliding across her legs had been a gift from Ara. Nona had nothing that had not been a gift. Even her presence at the convent was a gift. Her confirmation fee renewed each year by an anonymous donor, though she was sure that was Abbess Glass's doing. Ignoring the night lantern glowing beside Mally's bed at the door, Nona slipped out into the communal hall and advanced to the main door. Her fingers found the handle cold. The wind's threats came low and moaning through the door, the draught icy about her feet. Beneath the iron's chill, something else tingled at her senses. Something darker than the night, colder than the wind, many-angled and strange. She opened the door just a crack and set her eye to the gap. The wind whistled in all around, as if mocking her attempts at stealth. A figure stood so close before the door that the shock stole Nona's breath. For a moment, her heart held paralyzed within her chest, but the figure's raised hand didn't reach for her. Continuing instead to inscribe an invisible pattern upon the moving air between them. The eyes above the black scarf that wrapped the lower face were Yisht's. Shark's eyes, Ruli called them, flat and dead. The woman proved so intent on her work that Nona's small movement of the door didn't draw her attention from it. Nona watched as Yisht finished the pattern, her finger seeming to leave a lingering disturbance in the air, seen as water is seen on glass. She stepped to the right and began again. Was she searching for something? A white finger so pale it looked as if the frost had bitten into it, traced a new convolution into empty space. The pattern of it sank into Nona's eye, pressing against her brain, the feeling unpleasant and familiar. Sigils. Without pausing for thought, Nona hauled the door open. They stood for a moment. Nona, in the teeth of the wind, shockingly cold, her nightdress moulded about her, and giving no protection. Yisht, immobile, hand on the hilt of her sword, a gleaming inch revealed. Without a word, Yisht lowered her outstretched arm, turned, and walked away, the night seeming to thicken about her so that in 5 steps she had gone entirely.
"Shut the damn door!"
A shout from the grey dormitory. Nona closed it, shivering, and hurried back to bed. She fell asleep quickly, almost against her will, her mind twisting around the shapes Yisht had left hanging in the air. Cage. Nona followed a single twisting thread of fire. Cage. The words scratched against her concentration. Nona tried to make the voice her own. "I'm in a cage. The same cage that's held me my whole life. I was in a cage before Giljon took me, and I've never left it. A cage made of my own bones." The thread coiled into a spiral of three turns, just like the blade path. It rose and fell in patterns part familiar, part